So hi everyone, and welcome to this week's Quantum Gravity Seminar. Today our speaker is Francesco Sartini, who is a PhD student at the Laboratoire de Physique NLS de Lyon. And the title of the talk today is Black Hole Interior Symmetries and Regularization. As usual, if you want to ask questions, just raise your hand on Zoom, or you can use the Google form to ask questions, anonymous questions. Francesco, we cannot see your presentation anymore, and probably he's still there. Francesco, can you hear me? You are
muted. Can you hear me?
Yes, we cannot see your presentation anymore.
I don't know if I'm co-host. Yeah, okay. I'm still co-host, so I can share the screen. Yes. And then like this presentation. Yes, that should be okay.
I can see your text, but not your presentation.
It's okay?
Yes, now yes. Okay, so you can start whenever you want.
Now it's good, okay. Okay, sorry, I don't know what happened with the connection here in Lyon. So thank you for the invitation and the recording is okay, so it's okay. So thank you for the invitation. I hope you have a nice summer holiday. And so in this talk, I'm gonna tell you about the work I've done here in Lyon under the supervision of Mark and Etera about black hole interior. About the study of symmetries of black hole interior. So first of all, symmetries are actually plays a very important role in physics, and especially when we deal with gravity, because for instance, general relativity rests on a symmetry principle, that is the gauge invariance under diffeomorphism. But these symmetries are lots of things that are still need to be known about these symmetries, because the symmetries can be physical or gauge symmetries, and even in general relativity, the role of classical symmetries is still under study, because when there are boundaries, some gauge symmetry can become physical. And even what I'm gonna show you is that even if we go to simpler model, so we reduce some degrees of freedom, we still have some interesting properties coming from symmetries. So the simpler model that you can imagine is of course cosmology, when you kill all the degrees of freedom except for the time dependence of the scale factor. And of course, lots of work has been done for cosmologies and in the framework of loop quantum gravity, they give the so-called loop quantum cosmology that you may know well. And in a very recent work of 10 years ago, Etera and Jibril show that there is a symmetry, a conformal symmetry, that lives on top on the residual time diffeomorphism in the case of cosmology. And so we started this work by trying to generalize this the existence of this symmetry to black hole interior, and we discover interesting properties of this symmetry. So the plane for the presentation is to for my work is to start from the mini superspace describing black hole interior. So we kill all the degrees of freedom except for spherical symmetry, and I'll show you that it exists a symmetry living on the phase space of this theory that is isomorphic to the 2+1 Poincaré group. And this symmetry, actually, Poincaré group is a very important group in general relativity, and it's known that in some cases this group can be extended to some infinite dimensional extension. So for instance, in the case of flat, asymptotically flat space-time, we know that the Poincaré group is extended to the so-called BMS group. And so we tried to extend this Poincaré symmetry to the BMS group, and reinterpret the results in terms of this BMS group. This of course leads to many open many doors for future works that I will mention later. So the beginning, as I said, is the study of the black hole interior. So as you know, in the interior of a black hole, the radial coordinates became time-like, so we call it t, and so all the metric coefficient only depends on time. This particular line element, can you see my pointer?
Yes.
Yes, okay, thank you. This particular line element described in the black hole interior is the solution to Einstein equation when we consider metric of this form that are called, this class of metric is called Kantowski-Sachs cosmology, when we have three functions, so the Laps n and two fields v1 and v2, and d omega square is we are in 4D, so d omega square is the unit sphere, unit metric on the two sphere. And if you compute the Einstein equation for this class of metric, the solution is the Schwarzschild interior. So in order to show you this, I will consider the Einstein-Hilbert action of this metric. And the first thing that we need to remark is the fact that because of the fact that x is a priori is not compact, the integration over x will diverge. So we need to introduce some spatial integration cutoff to make the action finite. While of course on the omega square we don't have any problem because it's the sphere, so it's compact. And if we do this, the Einstein-Hilbert action reduces to a very simple 1D mechanical model, in the sense that 1D, so it depends on time. And so we are actually dealing with classical mechanics with three fields and V1 and V2.
Why do I have these vectors, yes. V2 and V1? V2 does depend on...
This is...
V2 does depend on X and T, or...
Does it depend on?
X and T?
No. All it depends only on time. No. V1 and V2 depends only on time. Both, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
As you can see, this is consistent with the solution, because if you... We know that, I mean, on shell, we have that that V1 will be T square, and V2 over V1 will be 2M over T minus 1. So it's, I mean... Both depends on time. Our action is actually we have killed all the diffeomorphism except for time dependent diffeomorphism. So this invariance under diffeomorphism allows to redefine the Laps as we want, so we can freely choose the Laps and even in a field dependent way. So what we did is to choose this particular Laps, because with this particular choice the action takes a very simple form. I've already put it in its ADM form, so this is the other Einstein-Hilbert action of this metric, and we see that the first one is the potential, the Ricci curvature of the of the spatial slice. The second one is the kinetic term depending of the extrinsic curvature of the slice, and the third one is the a boundary term that is given by the Gibbons-Hawking term. If you include the Gibbons-Hawking term in the Einstein-Hilbert action, this term will disappear. And of course, it doesn't play any role because if you consider this as a mechanical action of field that depends on your own time, we have a total derivative that doesn't play any role. But moreover, we can actually fix this time gauge by choosing a proper time. So we absorb the lapse in the definition of this proper time tau. And what happened is that the potential term is a constant, becomes a constant. So we can drop it from the action. And it seems like we have lost some information because we have absorbed one field into the time parameter, and we have lost also information about the scale factor, the infrared regulator. But this is actually not true if you do the things properly, because the only information that gives us the lapse, if you do the variation of this action, is the fact that the Hamiltonian of the action below is the level of the Hamiltonian of the action below is fixed to be L0 square. So if you want to, actually we could have start from the beginning in the proper time gauges, but in order to recover the right Einstein equation, we need to impose that the Hamiltonian of the theory is exactly this L0 square that appears in the metric. In order to show this explicitly, we can explicitly calculate the variation of the action with respect to the lapse, and we'll give this. And the same if we perform a Legendre transform of the action depending on the proper time, we recover an Hamiltonian and the equation of motion for the lapse simply tells that H on shell is L0 square. So at the end of the day, at the classical level, our theory is completely described by the action, by a phase space, a four-dimensional phase space it's a mechanical model with 2 degrees of freedom, V1 and V2, so a four-dimensional phase space, depending on this time tau, whose dynamic is described by this Hamiltonian H. That on shell is L0 square. So we can, as a simple mechanical model, we can calculate the equation of motion and, of course, solve them. And once we replace the solution for V1 and V2 into the line elements we have at the beginning, we need to first of all, we have a four-dimensional phase space, so we expect four initial conditions. The first one is simply the initial time, so it's tau naught. The second one is L0 square, so the value of the energy. And then we have two first integral that have this phase space expression. So these two observable commutes with Hamiltonian. And once we replace V1 and V2 into the line elements, we actually need to absorb one of the two first integral into a coordinate redefinition, and we will recover the Schwarzschild black hole solution, where the mass is described by this combination of first integral. The interesting fact is that our phase space contains all the solution for any given masses. It's not the phase space for a black hole at one given mass, but we can move our phase space contain all the masses, so we can move from one mass to the other. And so this we can find the solution of the equation of motion by simply writing the Hamilton equation and solve them, but we can also find them by exponentiating the flow of the Hamiltonian vector field on the phase space. And this is the same as calculating the iteratively calculate the Poisson bracket of, let's say, V2 with the Hamiltonian. So we start with V2, we calculate its time, the first time derivative, we call it C, because it's the generator of, it has the interpretation of generator of isotropic dilation on the phase space. And then we find that C dot is H. So the third derivative of V2 will be H bracket with H. So it's trivially zero. And this is, of course, consistent with the equation of motion, because it's the solution, because we know that V2 on shell is a 2-degree polynomial. So its third derivative is zero. And we can gather all the these three generator or these three observable together, and we see that they form an algebra on the phase space that is isomorphic to SL2R. And the reason why we call this variable like this, C, V, and H, is that this algebra is this SL2R algebra that I mentioned at the beginning in cosmology is exactly the same form as this one. So it's in cosmology, V is the volume is the scale factor power 3, H is the Hamiltonian, and C is again the generator of isotropic dilation. And the Casimir of this algebra is B squared, that is the minus B squared, that is the first integral of the equation of motion. But now, on top of this SL2R structure, we also have V1. So we do the same for V1. We see that, again, the iteration of bracket with H stops at the second step, because we find A, that it's a first integral, so A with H would be zero. And we can rearrange all these six observable in a more familiar way, and we recover an algebra that's isomorphic to the 2 plus 1 Poincaré algebra. So we can encode all the information about the dynamics of the space of the phase space into this six-dimensional algebra that is isomorphic to the Poincaré group, Poincaré algebra. We know that this algebra has two Casimir. And if you write down this Casimir, we see that, and if we write the generator in terms of phase space, so if V1, V2, P1, and P2, we find that this Casimir are zero. And this is, of course, because of we start from a four-dimensional phase space. We put on top of this four-dimensional phase space six generators. So we need to have two conditions. All these six generators will not be independent. We'll have two conditions on them, and this exactly this Casimir condition for the algebra. But this also implies that in the quantum level, in some sense, the phase space of black hole interiors carries massless representation of Poincaré group, because the first one, the first Casimir, is exactly the mass of 2 plus 1. From a particle point of view, this Casimir will be the mass of the particle. So in this sense, massless representation of Poincaré group. And the nice properties of this algebraic structure describing the dynamics is that it's related to symmetries of our system. So concerning the first part, so the SL2R sector of the algebra that we will call a rotation for simplicity, we can consider this transformation on proper time, that is a Möbius transformation of proper time, and we consider the field V1 and V2 as transforming as a conformal field of weight one. So it's the CT plus D square is the derivative of this Möbius transformation. We put this transformation into the action, and we see that the variation of the action is a total derivative. So as expected, these transformation are symmetries for our action. And we also have the R3 part of Poincaré group, so the abelian part, and this simply acts on V2, and it's parameterized by a 2-degree polynomial in the proper time. And again, if you put it into the action, we see that the variation of the action is the total derivative, so again, we have a symmetry. And these symmetries, one could think that it's somehow a residual diffeomorphism that comes from general relativity, but this is not true because when you consider a diffeomorphism, it doesn't change the solution. It's a gauge symmetry, so it doesn't change the physical solution we consider. While here, if you act on a solution with this transformation, we are actually moving all the first integral that label the solution, and in particular, we can change the mass. So, acting with the symmetry, we can actually generate a flow between different solutions, so between different masses, and this could be interesting to describe some evaporation or some mass evolution of black holes in terms of this symmetry. So the important fact is that these are physical symmetry. It's not gauge symmetry because they change the solution. Whenever we have a symmetry, we know that there are charges associated to it. So we can calculate, according to Noether theorem, you can calculate the Noether charges. And if you write them in terms of phase space, we see that the charges, they generate the infinitesimal version of the symmetry I showed you before, are the initial condition for the generator encoding the dynamics. So if you calculate the Poisson bracket within them, you find the same algebra as the generator I showed you at the beginning. So this means that that's why I said at the beginning that this algebraic structure encoding the dynamic is related to the symmetry of our system because the algebra is the same, and because the generator of the symmetry are the initial condition for the generator that encode the dynamics of the system. And now, as I said, we know that in some general relativity system, the Poincaré or the finite dimensional symmetry group can be generalized to an infinite dimensional group, like the BMS4 for the flat for the Minkowski space. And in this case, what is the generalization that we can think of? The simplest thing that you can do is, instead of considering a Möbius transformation, is to consider a general function of proper time. So you replace this Möbius transformation by a f, a general f, and again we suppose that V transform is conformal field of weight 1. And concerning the abelian part, the generalization is to replace this 2-degree polynomial by a general G function. So if you go through and we replace, we act with this transformation on the action, we see that we still recover a total derivative, but now we have a bulk term. So these are not symmetry of our action. And moreover, we see that the only possibility to have a symmetry is that the Schwarzschild derivative that appear here is zero, and this is true only for Möbius transformation. And for the second one, the only possibility is that the third derivative of G is zero, and this is true only for 2-degree polynomial in proper time. So actually the only symmetry that exists are the one that I mentioned before, of the memory symmetry of this form, of course. So our theory is not invariant on the BMS, but nevertheless, we can give an interpretation of these two terms that are linear in V1 and V2, because these two terms are the same that appear when we add a cosmological constant. I mean, constant is not effective cosmological term. Maybe it's more appropriate because, of course, the Russian derivative is not a constant. And the second one, the G3 term is not a constant, while for the Russian derivative, we can obtain this term by adding a scalar field in our action. So in a sense, these transformation are an extend concept of symmetry because they move, they map a theory with a scalar, an effective scalar constant and a scalar field to another theory with another scalar constant and another scalar field. And why I tell you that this is BMS, this is actually straightforward to verify, because if we act with this transformation like this, so before with generalized rotation and then with a generalized translation, we see that the composition rule and the inverse law for this transformation is exactly the same as the BMS tree group that is defined like this. So it's the diffeomorphism of a circle that could be decompactified and acting with the semi-direct product on its algebra seen as an abelian vector space. And moreover, the interesting aspect is that V1 and V2 actually belongs to the adjoint representation of these BMS tree, because if we look at the formula above, the transformation law for V1 and V2 under V and T, it's exactly the same as the transformation law of the algebra element of BMS. So V1 and V2 belongs to the adjoint representation of the BMS group. And another interesting aspect of this transformation is that even if they're not symmetries, we can nevertheless associate an integrable generator that generates on the phase space, that generates the infinitesimal version of the transformation of the BMS transformation. And these are given by these two generator on the phase space that have, of course, as you can see, are the direct generalization of the generator of the nether charges I showed you before. In order to recover the nether charges, you simply need to take alpha to be a polynomial up to degree 2, and the same for x. And so we have a set of generator, and we can compute the Poisson brackets, so the Poisson algebra of this generator. And the fact is that we don't recover it's not the central extension of this of the BMS algebra. But this is because actually we know that we can find a central extension. The charges form the algebra of the charges could give a central extension of the Lie algebra of the infinitesimal transformation. But this is true only for symmetries of the theory. Well, here we know that these are not symmetries of the theory, and if we restrict to the charges that generate to generator that are charges, so that are generate the symmetries, actually this means that the third derivative of x and y are zero. Well, the same for alpha and x. So that this red term disappear, and we recover exactly the algebra of BMS, of Poincaré subgroup. Nevertheless, this is consistent with the question of motion, because the Hamiltonian belongs to this set of charges, so we can compute from this expression here, we can compute the evolution of all the charges of dx and t alpha. And once we replace the solution of the equation of motion for any phase space expression, we see that this Poisson structure is consistent with the equation of motion. And the Hamiltonian belong to this set of generator, but for one of them, for so there may be some of you that knows BMS in the case of, for instance, 3D gravity or 4D gravity, and usually the Hamiltonian belongs to the abelian sector of the theory. But while here, you know, we see that the Hamiltonian belongs to the non-abelian subgroup of generator. So, as I said, the algebra of generator is not a central extension, but we can nevertheless give an interpretation of our BMS structure in terms of centrally extended representation. And this is done by looking at the coadjoint representation. So whenever we have an adjoint representation and a pairing between the algebra and the, so it's dual, the dual algebra, we have the dual of the Lie algebra, we can have a coadjoint representation. In this case, the coadjoint the covector are given by two forms on the proper time tau, paired like this with vectors. And whenever we have a coadjoint representation, this is useful in order to characterize the irreducible representation of the whole group by classification of the stabilizer of the little group of the orbit, so the element of the group that keep a coadjoint vector constant. So this is, well, that's just a bit a recall for the what is a coadjoint representation. And then in this case, what I take as covector, I take as covector the equation of motion for V1 and V2. So I write the variation of the action as in the standard way, with the equation of motion for V1 times delta V1 plus presympathetic potential. And the interesting aspect, first of all, is the fact that we can rewrite the action as simply J times V1 plus P times V2. We need to add a boundary term from the action I showed you at the beginning, but this is, it's a boundary term, so it doesn't play any role. And so the action is written as the pairing of vector and covector that is the same form of corner charges in corner charges of BMS 3 group in 3D gravity. So this is an interesting aspect of this rewriting of the action in terms of vector and covector. And moreover, if we act with the transformation I mentioned before on the covector P and J, we see that this is a general transformation for covector in BMS3 coadjoint action with two central charges, C1 and C2. But now we act explicitly on the expression of V of P and J in terms of V1 and V2. So we can have an explicit value of these central charges. And we see that C1 is 0 and C2 is equal to 1. That is the same as up to a constant here for C2. It's the same that happened in 3D gravity. So the first central charge is 0 and the second one is 1. And moreover, we know that the stabilizer, so the little group of the orbit starting at J equals 0, P equals 0, is the Poincaré's group. So looking at this BMS interpretation, we recover the fact that the Poincaré group is the symmetry group of our theory, because the starting point J equals zero, P equals zero is the fact that the equations of motion are zero. And this is conserved if you act with a general Poincaré transformation. So we recover the what we know about the symmetry in terms of coadjoint representation of BMS. So to resume, I have we have studied the symmetries of the of a space that contains all the black hole interior, so all, with all the masses that you want, and we have described the dynamics in terms of a Poincaré algebra that is related to a Lagrangian symmetry, and this Poincaré structure actually descend from a, can be reinterpreted in term of a BMS, of a more general BMS structure. And we have interpreted the equation of motion as coadjoint vector with a non-trivial central extension. And we have find again that the symmetry is the Poincaré group. We have interpreted this as stabilizer of the orbit. And we also rewrite the action as a pairing between covector and vector. So this, of course, opened some question. The first one is to provide, because we have a symmetry group, we can use representation, irreducible representation of this group to have a group quantization of our theory. Representation of Poincaré are well known, so this could be done, and we can also describe some mass evolution. So we could think about evaporation process in terms of flow of some of these symmetries. But also we point out an interesting role played by this BMS structure, and we can imagine to relate this BMS structure to some boundaries or asymptotic symmetries. And we can also imagine that this Poincaré symmetries, Poincaré invariant symmetry comes from a more general or higher dimensional theory. Like what happens if you imagine, if you think about JT gravity, that if you consider the boundary of JT gravity, you have SL2R symmetry living, describing the dynamic of the bulk. We can imagine that this is, our theory is the boundary theory of a, we don't know, of a more general theory. And we can, actually we have shown that this action that I mentioned at the beginning is not unique in the case of 4D Schwarzschild black hole, but we can find the same action for more general, there are more quantum, more general relativity system that have the same action. Bianca has a question maybe. I finish. Yeah, no, sorry, I finish. So it's, So yes, as I said, there are other general relativity systems that have the same action, so that have the same properties that I show you for black holes in 4D. But we can also imagine that we can find some other, like not BMS, but a double copy of Virasoro or something else in another general relativity system. So thank you for the attention.
Yeah. So thanks, Francesco, for this very nice talk, and also for finishing your presentation on time. So let's thank Francesco. Okay, so let's start now with questions. I see that there is a question by Bianca, but first I would like to give priority to students in case they have questions. So for now, I see no questions from students. So Bianca, please, you can ask a question.
Yeah, thanks, Francesco, for this interesting talk. So I want to recap a bit. So you do start with a four-dimensional kinematic phase space.
Okay.
And in principle, it would be a two-dimensional physical phase space.
Yeah.
So then first you identify an interesting action of SL2R times R3. So basically the three-dimensional Poincaré group, which is six-dimensional on this four-dimensional phase space.
Yeah.
Have you already identified? I mean, and so in principle, it is an advantage for quantization because you could try to use a representation theory of the Poincaré group for the quantization of this kinematical Hilbert space and then also on the physical Hilbert space.
Yeah.
Have you done that or have you already seen that there's an advantage for that?
Yeah, it's work on, it's ongoing work.
Okay, I don't want to. But it seems that, okay, and so that the Casimirs vanish means that spin and mass of this representation vanishes?
Yeah. You mean this? Wait.
At some point, you say that these two Casimirs have to vanish. And indeed, we have a six-dimensional group.
Yeah, because you have a six-dimensional algebra living on a four-dimensional phase space, so, you know. I mean,
okay, it's not.
You need to have some dependence. I mean, all the six generator cannot be independent.
Yeah, so it's kind of a null.
Yeah, so
if you want representation to, and the spinless one, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not a trivial representation. I mean, it's only a massless. Uh-huh. It's a massless representation, but because I know that could be a bit confused because. The mass, the name mass for the representation has nothing to do with the mass of the black hole.
No, I mean mass in terms of...
So the mass of the black hole is a combination of this...
Mass of the Poincaré, same. Okay. And then I got a bit confused because then now you have the infinite dimensional BMS group acting on this phase space or acting on an extension of the phase space.
No, it's acting on the same phase space.
Okay, but it's...
The phase space is the same. That's uh-huh. That's why this algebra is not... It's not a central extension of BMS.
Uh-huh.
Because and what is, you have the same phase space as before, but you're acting on...
And what would be the advantage on kind of using this infinite dimensional group on this... finite dimensional phase space?
The advantage of using this is that you can imagine that you can maybe explore different solution because they said, wait, this here, we could map to different cases where you have a cosmological constant or a scalar field, so we can actually explore different. I mean, if you look only at black hole with a given mass or the interior of a black hole without matter, without anything, Poincaré, it's enough. So we don't have to go to this BMS stuff, except if there is a relationship with some higher dimensional or some boundary symmetries that is not clear yet. But as you can include matter, maybe this BMS structure could help to deal with. It's not clear, but I mean, yeah, we have an infinite dimensional group, so we can imagine to include more physics.
So you're actually mapping to extending to a wider theory space because among other things, It does, for instance, this cosmological constant term, which is not a cosmological constant.
Yeah, it's not a constant. It's effective cosmological constant.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for the question.
More questions? Céline?
Hey, Francesco. I was wondering, you start with a Schwarzschild black hole. I mean, do you have you looked, or do you have an idea what would happen if you start with care, or it's not possible, or?
I mean, the problem of care is that you cannot, I think it's not possible to write a one-dimensional mechanical model because you have a radial dependence. Yeah, I mean, you have angular dependence, I think. So.
Yeah, you have like, what's the term?
I didn't check, but yeah. But I don't know how it's possible to look at care.
Okay.
But so you did BTZ, right? So that this works, so maybe 4D could work also.
Maybe.
Ah, okay.
Because in BTZ it works exactly the same.
For BTZ, for BTZ in 3D, you can choose a gauge, like you can parameterize the line element, and with a suitable choice of V1 and VV in the right position,
mm-hmm.
and if you write the isolated action, you find exactly this one.
Okay, so probably okay. Just other parameters, okay.
Because all the integration disappear, and it's simply when you put the V1 and V2 into the line element that the solution is different. But on the phase space and on the mechanical point of view, you have exactly the same action.
Okay.
And also the same properties.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, but this is for BTZ in 3D. For carrying 4D, I don't know.
Yeah, but maybe the same mechanism can work well. It's just okay.
Yeah, could can work. Yeah, maybe.
Other questions, in particular from students? Okay, while the others think about questions, I would also ask a couple of questions. So first, might be early to ask this question, but so are you aware of any physical implication for the existence of this symmetry? And a second question would be, do you think that this symmetry would still be there in case you consider a theory that has higher derivatives in the action, so not just Einstein-Hilbert, but say plus Stelle terms?
So, physical implication. I don't know any physical implication. I mean, what do you mean by physical implication? The fact that this symmetry exists, that this symmetry should be, maybe if you say that this symmetry exists and should be conserved after a quantization, you can, if you think about LQG stuff, so like the polymer polymerization and things like this, and you say that this symmetry should be conserved after, should be there even if you polymerize the system, then you can have a criterion to say if a polymerization procedure is compatible, at least if a polymerization procedure is compatible or not with this symmetry. So that could be a physical implication of this symmetry. And then the second question, if there is higher derivative, I don't know what happens with higher derivative. I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering because
wide
I mean
derivative term
many of
behaves
the might be difficult because some of the steps rely on the fact that one can rewrite some terms in the action as total derivatives, but probably with higher derivatives becomes a little bit.
Yeah, if you
that's
if
why
you put,
I was asking.
Yeah, if you put like v set on derivative of v inside. I don't know. It could be. I think it's because and the fact that it's total derivatives really when you act on the action with the transformation, it's really this combination that compensate all the terms appearing. If you change or if you add some more, I don't know.
Okay, that's generally you might expect that the phase space changes because you have higher time derivatives and you have to add them to the phase space.
Mm-hmm. So also yes.
Yeah. This could be it as well. Yeah.
So thanks for answering my question. Other questions?
I have a basic question. When you define the charges, where is the boundary? I mean, where do you define these charges? Is it like a finite distance? Is it the horizon?
I mean, for the nether charges.
Yeah.
For these charges, and these are it's a mechanical system. So it's really like when you do the free particle, and you say that it's a translational invariant, and you find that. A charge, another charge is like it's really the nether theorem for mechanics. So it's there are boundary there are bulk charges. They live on the there is no boundary here because there is only one parameter. Where it's not a field theory. It's a all the fields only depend on time. So the charges.
Yeah, but for instance, you can define that the mass, it's a charge defined at infinity on a true sphere infinity. So here, when you talk about nether charges, I would expect these objects to be defined on some codimension true surface somewhere, no?
No, there are not codimension two surfaces here. Because it's really 1D.
But Daniela, they're just defined as constants of motion, which originally was the meaning of charges.
Yeah, it's simply a constant of motion. Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah.
Also, you do is that as generators of these transformations, because it's a one dimension. There is no boundary.
Yeah.
As Francesco said.
I mean, I still have a 3D slice inside, right?
No, you would have to translate it to everything, and it's not. It's inside the black hole.
Could be misleading because.
I mean, I can still define the black hole mass as a codimension. I mean, you talk about black hole mass, right? So, is that the DM mass when you say that, or is?
Yeah. But this is the space-time at the beginning you have a space slice, and I say that I find this action by considering a four-dimensional space-time and so on. But if you look, if I tell you that I give you this action here, there is any space-time information here. There is no spatial slice, anything. It's a mechanical system, so there is not all the charges that I define are simply infinitesimal generator of the symmetry or some nether charges of the symmetry as you want. But there is no spatial slice here. Then if you put the equation of,
So basically, because you have integrated already over the angular coordinates to write that action.
Yeah. It's then when you put the solution into the line elements here, here, that you find this solution. You say, I have a solution with a mass m, but and then the mass m is defined as the ADM mass, but actually it's simply the fact that once I put the solution inside here, I find this with this m. It's like a parameter. It's a parameter labeling the solution from the phase space point of view.
Yes.
It's not a.
I mean, the fact is that usually that guy, when you integrate over the true sphere, that just give you the trivial factor of 2 pi or 4 pi, and that's what you have left. But a priori, it is defined on a true surface, that quantity is just that the angular dependence is trivial, and then it becomes just a constant. Okay, so, and so the fact that this quantity can change, somehow it's a bit confusing to me, because, I mean, you are in a static situation, so the ADM mass doesn't change. But here you're finding that you can change this. No,
I change the mass if I act with this physical, with the physical symmetry. If I consider the phase space and I act with a particular transformation, I change the solution, so I change the mass. It's like if you say that.
So you're introducing some flux or some radiation, or how is that possible otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, it's simply the fact that you can, as you can change the solution, you can, I mean, it's like if you consider, a free particle going in one direction, and say, well, but there is rotational invariance, but it doesn't mean that the particle rotates. It simply means that you can map one solution to the other by acting with a symmetry.
No, I know, but I mean, if I think of BMS, for instance, you know, like you can change the mass if you have some shear. So here, how should I understand this action as something that, do you have
synthetic flux? You can let's say modify the Hamiltonian by including a time-dependent evolution with some other generator that will modify the mass. I don't know if I see. I don't know, but if you consider it instead of the Hamiltonian, h plus a function of time times a generator of this Poincaré symmetry that doesn't commute with Hamiltonian, you will have the mass will not longer be conserved and will evolve. But you can interpret this evolution in terms of group evolution. So that's why it's nice.
So okay, let me rephrase the question.
Algebraic structure.
Okay, let me rephrase the question.
When you if
I understand your question. So indeed, this is, I mean, it's analogous to what happens, for example, in field theory or in BMS, in gravity, where you would have you have transformations that can change the mass, right?
If you have a radiation,
indeed you have radiation. So here it's just, you can think of this as a mechanical, a finite dimensional analogous of all these things that happen in gravity or in field theory, except that in this case, it shows that, and as Francesco showed, when you compute the charges, so either the charges associated to these Poincaré symmetries, and even if you extend these to these generalized BMS charges, all these charges are integrable. There is no notion here of flux or non-integrability or things like this, in fact. So indeed, you have here, it's not the same thing as in 4D in BMS. You have transformations here, which are physical symmetries. They change the mass, but they're not related to any, at least in the usual sense, to any notion of flux because there is no place here for flux to leave because it's one dimension, it's a mechanical model, so there is no boundary, there is no, there cannot be a notion of a,
right. And so the central charge that you find in the algebra, is it, I mean, that, so it's not related to some kind of sympathetic flux, or it's pure, I mean, it's the bracket you compute is the bracket for another charge, is the Poisson bracket of the another charge when you write the algebra?
This one?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, this is the Poisson bracket.
Of the another charge?
On the field. Yeah, yes,
the
this is a Poisson bracket defined on the field. You can, you write, yeah. If you write down this, this generator in terms of phase space, and you can calculate the Poisson bracket as its definition, usual definition derivative with respect to V and minus the derivative with respect to P, antisymmetric. It's the usual definition of I mean, it's really a mechanical system, so it's
yeah. Yeah. So you have a sympathetic potential, right?
Yeah. It's a V dvd.
Yeah. So
the sympathetic form is dv1 dp1.
So you can write the nether charge from the sympathetic potential, and
are those
nether charge?
Of course. It's I mean for. Yeah, it's the same. This you can find these charges. Yeah, you can write them as a. I found them exactly starting from the sympathetic potential. These charges, I cannot tell that these are nether charges because they are not associated to a symmetry, but you can. I mean, if you act on the sympathetic potential with the infinitesimal version of the transformation of the BMS transformation, you find this integrable generator. And in this sense, they are integrable because you actually find them starting from the sympathetic potential. Yeah, exactly. But there is no flux of sympathetic potential. There is no flux. Yeah.
So this hints back to the fact, as Francesco said, that here there is a kind of a new notion of symmetry, in fact, because your Poincaré is strictly a symmetry, then you're making the guess that you enhance it to BMS, and then somehow these BMS generators are still integrable. The only thing is that because they're not strictly speaking symmetries, they form an algebra, and you see the red term is not a central term. That's the only difference with the usual form of the BMS algebra. And then on the Lagrangian, it doesn't leave the theory invariant, but it's a bit it's quasi-invariant in the sense that it produces cosmological constant in a scalar field. And then if you act again with the BMS transformation, you stay again within this space of theories. You just change the couplings you just change the value of lambda and the value of the coupling of the scalar field. So it's a bit like a...
Yeah, so in which sense should I think of them as symmetries? What do they preserve?
Well, these transformations, they preserve a solution space. Exactly like, then it's exactly like BMS in gravity. You preserve a solution space, but you don't preserve the mass or the angular momentum. So that's why it's not a gauge symmetry. So it doesn't preserve things, but it's.
But it's solutions to different series, no?
Yeah, if you think about BMS, yeah.
So isn't that in general? I mean, you can probably take any kind of series with six coupling constants and apply some weird transformation, and that generates you a space of actions because you just call them new actions. And that would be a general mechanism to define whatever you call that, a general asymmetry.
Yes, probably this is true. Yeah. But I would say that here the question is now to understand which symmetries controls which space of theories, you know, because you want to know which transformations you should look at, and you want to know what reasonable space of theories you want to explore. So something which has physical meaning, like
So, but there is some relation between the flow of the symmetries and the flow of coupling constants, for instance.
In principle, yes, yeah. So probably studying more than these BMS representations and what they mean in this context would maybe tell you about the flow of these couplings.
But so they preserve the form of the metric that you start from? Is that in that sense I can understand them as BMS? Or because BMS seem to preserve like the Bondi metric, right? I mean, the form of the metric. So is it the same thing here? The metric that you wrote for the interior is preserved with these transformations? Or?
Well, here already Poincaré does not preserve because, as Francesco showed, it changes the mass. Right?
You can change the mass, but the form stays the same.
Yeah, that's a case by construction because it's just defined surface space.
Yeah, also I think this is this looks at least like a long discussion, so perhaps you can continue later. And I would ask if there are more questions from anyone else. So we would have time for one more question. Okay, if not, let's thank Francesco again for his nice talk and the discussion. I would ask everyone to unmute yourself to clap your hands and thank Francesco.